Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we have a chat with CBS analyst and two-time major champion Dottie Pepper and talk about Webb Simpson's putting turnaround.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Keely Levins. Keely, looked like you had a pretty good Super Bowl spread there, but not
many friends.
And same with me. We should have like combined.
We should have.
I had two people over, three people over.
Yeah. We were down at my neighbor's house. The spread was on your former kitchen table, Sam.
Oh,
I'm happy to contribute.
All coming together. Yeah, there were six of us, and we each brought like a full dish. So I'll be eating Super Bowl leftovers for the week.
Well, I'm allowed to buy the Costco cookies for the Super Bowl. And since I only had three people. Well, not allowed, but like I feel like oh, it's for a party.
You're
it's
usually
okay.
Not.
I don't buy them. I hardly ever buy them. And so everybody had like two, but I still have about, 18 cookies left. So I had two for breakfast this morning on the train.
Wow.
This is why he's got to monitor closely.
So I have like a week full of Costco cookies.
So just to say that when you come home from Costco most weeks, they're like, let me see the bag real quick.
I can see Michelle just like cookies.
No, she's always there with me. That's the problem. If she wasn't, I could sneak it a little bit.
Well, if you're having two for breakfast.
That's really dangerous heading into Girl Scout cookie season too, though. Like, that's too many. You got too many cookies.
I know, but you got to eat them because they're fresh, so. Anyway.
Solid theory.
But before the big game, we had Webb Simpson obviously win another waste management playoff that I think people were worried was going to go into the game. Although the game now starts at like 6:40 something. It's really incredible. But it actually worked out perfectly because you get to watch golf almost right up to the game. And you had an incredible comeback like the Chiefs pulled off with Webb birdieing the final two holes in regulation and then birdieing the 18th hole. Sam, obviously, he's up to number 7 in the world. We know how good he is. He makes all the U.S. teams and this and that. But since the Players in 2018, he hadn't won, which was kind of crazy. So how important was this for him to get a W?
Well, because you're mentioning the fact that he's now top 7 in the world. I think he suddenly becomes one of those guys you're talking about, rightfully so, as one of the top 7 or 8 players in the world. I don't think you're having that conversation before this week, but it was an incredibly impressive week from him, especially how well he putted. And also, I know that another sort of a storyline was how well he drove the ball. They're like, people are talking about Webb Simpson being kind of a bunter out there compared to most guys, but he drove the 17th green. He drove it, I think he was averaging 305 yards off the tee all week. So a very well-rounded game, and now a guy, as we head into sort of some major events, big events, is a guy that a lot of people will be paying more attention to.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It looks he's gained some distance. I know Brian Wacker wrote about that today. He's still not one of the longer hitters, but it's made enough difference. I mean, again, next to Tony Finau yesterday, it looked like he wasn't hitting it that far, but he hits it far enough.
Well, I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I think Tony Finau driving that green, he opted not to try to drive that green.
Yes.
But Tony Finau driving that green is not a big deal. I think Webb Simpson, he had to hit, close to a perfect drive, which he did, kind of right up the gut to get on 17. So that's the difference. Like, some guys are sort of, swinging out of their shoes or finding that extra gear to get out there with some guys, whereas for some guys it's, quite natural.
And I bet that Tony was protecting against long by not pulling driver out. When you have that much adrenaline, like, coming down the stretch, he was probably just like, no, like, I'm not going to go long here. I'm just going to play this safe. That fairway wood could have made it to the green, too, if it didn't get hung up in the bunker.
100%. 100%. I mean, as someone who's very long myself, it's one of the things you have to always account for trouble long. So
Yeah. So, again, to me, the most amazing thing about Webb Simpson is this was a guy who was a major champion, decorated career at Wake Forest. Ooh. Deeks.
It was good to see someone from Wake not choke.
It was nice. I'll admit that. It really was. But anyway, I mean, this was one of the best players. He was in the top 10 in the world. He was on the Ryder Cup team, again, U.S. Open champ. And he, uses the belly putter, anchors the putter. And the anchor band comes along. And we had the question with what's going to happen to Webb Simpson, Keegan Bradley, Adam Scott. Right. You had these guys, and we're like, oh, man, their careers might be over. And obviously for those top guys, that's not happened. But in Webb's case, he's actually become a better putter than ever before. He now admits that this kind of helped him, that he probably wouldn't have reached the next level of putting. And he was, I did a stat here. In his first six seasons, he averaged being 36th on tour in strokes in putting, which is good, solid. The last 3 years now, including this year, which is small sample size, 5th, 11th, and 7th. So he's like a top 10 putter on the tour now, in addition to the great ball striking. And we had Paul Tesori on when he won the Players, and Paul Tesori joked that the early switch away from the belly putter cost Webb over $5 million that first year. He went to 174th in strokes gained putting because he switched before he had to, because he wanted to kind of get out ahead of it. So, you know, in one way, he did maybe cost himself money that year, but it allowed him, I think, to get to the next level quicker. So, you know, he went 174th, 177th, then he made a big jump to 88th, and now again, 5th, 11th, 7th. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
I would love to hear from a more educated voice about what exactly changed in his stroke beyond the fact that he was anchoring.
Yeah.
And he now is now no longer anchoring. But there is a theory to be said that when he was anchoring, there was a ceiling. Like, he went from being... Maybe he was believed to be a mediocre putter, and anchoring allowed him to be a decent putter, and at times, a opportunistic putter. And one could argue that now that he's no longer anchoring, he has found another gear where he's gone from, a decent putter to an excellent putter. And, you know, he's developed a stroke, or he's developed confidence. A lot of it, obviously, is about mindset, where even aesthetically looking down and seeing, you know, your hands on the putter like a traditional stroke, in some way that's helped him. And now there's a great belief when he's standing over a ball, which is never more apparent than over those last three putts.
Well, the crazy thing too is when he made the switch, it was at the end of 2014, and he's told this story before. He told it at the Players when he won 2018, but he was scared he was going to go back and use it, so he actually just snapped the putter over his knee and broke it, so he had to use the new putter, and the rest
that's system. Like you, it's like Costco cookies in the house, like taking them out of the mix.
No.
So you don't have them in the house anymore.
I get it now when people say that. If it's the only way I'm not going to eat something now is if it's not there. So I get it. I mean, I get what Webb was doing. You're right. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
On the flip side, poor Tony Finau, obviously, who is kind of like Webb, except he doesn't have the major and the Players under his belt. He has so many top finishes. He's ranked right around the top 10, but he never wins. This week, it was like he had to win. He had the whole Kobe thing going. He makes the putt. He does the tribute. I mean, he last week he compared Kobe's death to his mom's death in a car accident. A lot because it happened so suddenly. But like, I just thought it was all shaping up for him. He had the two-shot lead going on the stretch. Keely,
it's so sad.
Yeah.
It's really brutal to watch. Obviously, so happy for Webb. But like, Tony is just one of those guys that has every piece. You know, he's one of the most athletic guys on tour. He's so tough. He has the length. Obviously, we saw some faults with the putter, but he's just one of those players that it feels like any moment he's going to just break through and be dominating. And it's just, I feel like we've had a dozen of those moments in the last year alone, and it's just not happening.
I don't know if we've ever had one as pronounced as this, though.
No,
This was
really brutal.
He lost a playoff to Xander, but it was in Shanghai, so it was tough. I don't think a lot of people were watching. I don't think we were watching. But you know, Joel Beal for us just did a piece on Finau. He doesn't quote choke in the final round, but he also doesn't really make a move, and that's what we saw this time. He shot a 70, which was okay, and the course was playing pretty tough. It was playing pretty firm. It's not like guys were going crazy low, but you know, he shot 62 on Saturday and then he shoots a 70 on Sunday. And I know it's tougher when you're in the final group and all that, but
I mean, it's embodied by that 17th hole, right? Because I mean, in hindsight, it's so easy to say, well, why did he play it so conservatively on 17 when he could have really stepped in the guy's throat, put him away? Whereas obviously it was a situation where he's got a two-stroke lead at the time. If he hits it in the water, we are killing him for being a complete idiot, not managing his lead as well as he could. So that's an example, perhaps, of a guy being somewhat outside of his comfort zone and, you know, needing to get across the finish line. And that, you know, at the most crucial moment, a couple of unforced errors, or I guess I should say less than inspiring golf shots allowed a guy to catch him.
I will say, though, 18, after Webb pulls within one, he blasted a 366-yard drive and then hit a little lob wedge to about 7 feet mm-hmm. on 18 when he could have been playing it safe and whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, so he did kind of go for it there, and it looked like he was going to birdie and maybe win by two, but of course Webb makes the putt on him. So, yeah, it was tough. And I feel bad, too, because it's crazy. Playoff, two guys combined 9 kids between them.
Yeah.
But I was at RSM, and all of Webb's kids were there, the 5 kids running around, Dowd trying to keep them, and he loses, and you're like, oh, that's such a bummer. And then this time, Webb's kids weren't there, but Tony's kids were there,
right?
And he loses.
So they live five minutes away from
right.
TPC.
No, no,
Scottsdale,
I know. Of course they were there.
Can you
yeah.
imagine, like, I don't know what didn't follow what the sequence was, but did they, like, pick up what they were doing and say, let's go to the golf course, yeah, right. about to win. Kids are all there. I put down Fortnite for this.
That's too bad. But, yeah, anyways, 30 years old. Somehow he's still stuck on the one win, the 2016 Puerto Rican Open. At some point it's going to happen, but obviously didn't this week. All right, we did want to touch on the, you know, this Premier Golf League is kind of getting in the mix here. As you know, and you know that it's becoming an actual threat potentially to the PGA Tour when the PGA Tour Commissioner, Jay Monahan, sends out an email which got around kind of warning players, like, you know, be careful of this new thing and saying that the money's coming from Saudi Arabia. But also kind of like, if you do this, you might not be able to come
yeah,
back.
One and, or the other.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand where he's coming from. And you realize that it could be a threat, especially if it's going to be that much more money. I think Joel, writing a lot of good stuff, mentioned that the winner for the 10 event season long thing could win up to $50 million mm-hmm. if they
it's
win
insane,
the
yeah.
team thing and the individual and all this other stuff. And even as much as Rory won last year, that's more than twice as much as he won last year. So again, I mean, is it's just money, Sam, that's kind of driving this, or, I mean,
I would think so. Yeah. I would think it's money. Well, driving it, obviously someone sensing there's an opportunity to capitalize on, what they might deem deficiencies in the current model. What I would argue, though, is that when you look back at all these sort of, you know, rogue leagues that mm-hmm. have arisen, you know, the USFL was an example of, there was no spring football. Let's have some spring football. The, you know, earlier on, the ABA and the WHA and hockey were examples where guys felt like they were not getting paid what they should be paid. I mean, again, I don't want to sound like a PGA Tour apologist here, so mm-hmm. I'm really sensitive to that. But what about the overall model is severely broken? I mean, if you're Rory McIlroy or Brooks Koepka or Tiger Woods, yeah. Now, would those guys like to make more and play less? Probably.
Sure.
Right? I understand that. But it's a pretty good life. It's a pretty right. good life. And I, you know, this week the tour is at Pebble Beach.
Right.
Right? So you're going to...
Well, and hardly any of the top guys go there.
I know. I'm just saying. So this is like, this is an example. Where this yeah. is what they're, this is what they would be, quote unquote, complaining about.
Right.
Or have it, you know, this is what they... a rogue league would be competing with. So I am all for ways to improve the current product, because I think we can all agree there
yes.
are a number mm-hmm. of ways that golf can be improved upon, the way it's broadcast, the way it's structured, the way when guys are playing, all that. But I think, you know, overall, golf is a game that kind of you know, takes a lot of pride, and it's sort of linked to history and linked to tradition. And the fact that, you know, you're at Pebble Beach this week and Riviera next week, these are golf courses where, you know, every great player in the game play. I just feel like I have a hard time seeing whether a new league and maybe, you know, some more money for a few guys would be worth kind of turning your back on all that.
Yeah, I think the only, like, the biggest positive that I see from this conversation even starting is that it does – more seriously open up a conversation about, like, where can the PGA Tour improve. And one of the conversations that I liked the most was about pace of play and how, like, these new events would be shotgun, so that
yeah.
like it all happens within
right.
like 5 or 6 hours, which I'm not saying that's necessarily better, but I think that the, you know, the just idea generation
right.
is never a bad thing, and creative thinking is not a negative thing for the tour.
Yeah, no, Joel's column was really good in that. And like Sam was saying, I mean, you know, some of these leagues, like the ABA with the 3-point shot, I mean, you know, things like that that we're not even potentially thinking of yet.
Sure.
Could come about from this, and it could be something that the PGA Tour ends up adopting. And like you said, Keely, I mean, some of the players seem a little open to it because they maybe do think things have gotten a little stale. I guess Rory McIlroy has said that, you know, this new league could exploit some holes in the current system, and they could find things that are better. But from a fan's perspective, I don't know how much could change that would be that different. And also, it seems so tough to figure out. Again, it's not my problem to figure this out, but if you have 48 players and, you know, like a Phil Mickelson is obviously going to be involved in this probably, but he's like the 80th ranked player in the world. You know, and how do you, and then throughout the year, what if someone went to major, they're not in this 48, this cool club? I mean, it's kind of like,
that's the other huge question is, and I admittedly don't quite understand how it all works, but most majors, entry into a major championship is dictated by, for one qualification, it's world ranking points.
Yeah.
So if you're no longer, let's just say, guys say, you know what, I'm not going to play the PGL Tour anymore, I'm going to play the PGL. And the PGL is no longer yields world ranking points. Are guys going to put that on the line and not play in the Masters or the U.S. Open? If
you almost have to think that the PGL has to get world ranking points.
But okay, but who recognizes that? It's just complicated.
No, I agree. It's very complicated, and with the ins and outs, and you know, okay, so you have the top guys can make a lot more money, but this now could hurt the next level of guys. I mean, I don't know. I don't think
that's addressing a problem on the tour right now. I don't think that the top guys make too little.
I mean, the argument that's been floated out is that it's that the top 10 players in the world, the gap between them and, you know, the other 120 is not that great. It's not, you know, it's not commensurate to the gap between the best paid baseball players and the kind of middle rung Major League Baseball players or whatever. I guess, but is that really bad? I mean, are you feeling for Brooks Koepka or Rory McIlroy? They're not making enough money.
I'm not, of course, but I mean, you know what? You argue it doesn't matter. You know, if they deserve more, they should get more. But you have to crunch a lot of numbers to come up with that, because again, comparing
sponsors
it to other sports,
and like,
right? Comparing to other sports and everything is tough. Obviously, the NBA, the NFL, they generate a lot more revenue than the PGA Tour. So, you know, it makes sense that the tour guys make a little less. And you know, again, Rory can choose his own schedule. These other guys don't get to choose their own schedule.
That's true.
I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, and we know the top guys don't play that much anymore. So they do have it good, but if there's a way for them to improve them, you know, their standing, I could see them going for it. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. All right. Anyway, we do have a tournament this week at Pebble Beach, which is different, obviously, because of the celebrity aspect. Sam, I know who you're most likely you want to watch because he's your favorite athlete ever, the Wayne.
Jerry Tardy? Oh. Yeah.
Well, Jerry Tardy is also in the mix there at Pebble. But Wayne Gretzky. And also, kudos to him, because as you saw, that video of him in like the 100-yard dash against, who was it? It was like Pele. They were probably like 50 years old. Let's be honest.
No, wait, I missed this.
This
what
is the superstar sports.
Sugar Ray Leonard. Pele, and
Bjorn Borg. And Gretzky blows them
literally
away.
Literally blows them away, 100-yard dash.
I love it.
Like, I mean, like Usain Bolt on them. Like,
oh my
not
God.
Even close. So I was impressed by
so
you know,
dominant.
A hockey player with the.
I don't know what.
Hockey's like all fast twitch. Why?
I know. Anyway, Sam, you're pumped about seeing Wayner.
I do. I mean, you know, the celebrity aspect of Pebble Beach is fun. It's you know, for me, the star of Pebble Beach is Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
I thought you could say Wayne Gretzky.
Well, other than Wayne Gretzky. Yeah.
It's just, you know, it doesn't do a ton for me, the celebrity part of it. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different week than the rest. And obviously, it's very fun because they do make a point of trying to have, they try to show every amateur a lot of amateurs on TV. And obviously, our fearless leader, Jerry Tardy, is playing this week as he usually does. And he's hit some good shots under pressure.
He stuck one on 17.
Yeah.
Missed the putt.
But
and then remember when they showed him on 18 and he three putted, and meanwhile Nance was like, "Oh, he's a tremendous player." Blah, blah, blah. And then meanwhile he three putts. He's like, "Well, you don't see that often," or something. So he'll get some airtime again.
Definitely.
Gary Muledeer, I ask this every year. Who is he? And he's always there.
I don't know.
He's like a musician.
Gary what?
Mule Deer?
I don't know. But I'm not
He's
the wrong guy.
He's only known for being in this tournament.
Speaking of the Super Bowl, there was like three ads featuring musicians now who I had no idea who they were.
Oh, yeah. I don't know any of these people either.
You really. Like even the halftime show, like those two guys that came in?
I have no idea.
Who, like Bunny something? Bad Bunny?
No
Bad
idea.
Bad Bunny.
No,
yeah, you need to be no a young idea. Millennial, clearly. Yeah. Our producer this week, Matt. Like,
I'm like, what? Who is that?
Turn it down. Google says that Gary Muledeer is an American comedian.
He's a comedian. Oh, see, I thought he was a musician. I mean, I have no idea. This guy's in it. There's only like 24 celebs in it, and he's one of the guys every year. Kenny G's not even in it anymore, and he's a stick. He's won there before.
And Wahlberg wasn't on the list.
Well, he must not want to play, because if he did.
Well, no, of course. I know. I'm just sad.
I know I've told the story before, but Gretzky, when I covered the Pebble Beach, the Golf Digest Challenge, he thought he shot 99. It was 100. It was heartbreaking. But he did
hole out
on 7, bunker shot, and then shank one on 8, which it was incredible. But I'm excited because Eli Manning's playing, of course. And this is his first public appearance really since, obviously since his retirement. So that's cool. And then, of course, we always keep our eyes on Larry Fitzgerald, who won a couple years back by a million shots with a 10.6 handicap. He's now down to a 9 handicap, which is a little better. Guess how many rounds he's played this year already? By the way, it's February 3rd.
Not more than 15.
15 rounds.
That's amazing. By the way, it's worth mentioning that I'm a huge Larry Fitzgerald guy based on the fact that my son caddied for him this summer.
That's right. And loved him. That's right.
And I will say this. Two things. Amazing guy.
Yep.
Great tipper, but very good golfer.
Very good golfer.
Which pokes holes in his theory that he was
We've heard from Mike Johnson. Have you seen him?
He was at the hot list, like, it was like 4 or 5 years ago, and he was getting into it. Mm. Like, he hit some shots. He's like, no, I'm like figuring it out, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. And then I've seen him, like, you know, he was at the LPGA celebrity event in Orlando earlier this month. And I was like, damn, like, that is some improvement. Yeah. That was the first time I've seen him in like 4 years.
Well, good for him. He must play everything out to get these scores, because he's from like an 81 to an 89, like every score.
Yeah.
But yet at Pebble, he was like spinning back shots. I mean, it was just a total joke.
Hey, you know, athletes show up.
Yeah.
You know,
they do. All right. Well, anyway, it's something we'll be excited to watch it. And one of the people who will be there for CBS's coverage, of course, is Dottie Pepper, the great on-course analyst for CBS. Before that, a 17-time winner. Keely, I know from upstate New York.
And yeah, randomly, my mom and Dottie like grew up playing junior golf together. And then they were both like on tour at the same time, which is pretty crazy. And Dottie was inducted into the New York State Golf Hall of Fame last year, and then my mom was inducted this year. So it's always good to get to chat with Dottie.
Very good. Well, anyway, please have a listen to our chat with CBS's Dottie Pepper.
It's 2020, and we're all looking for ways to improve our health and hit our own personal goals this year, whether it's being smarter about how we train, making a better effort to get more sleep, or simply thinking more about our body's overall wellness. As Alex likes to point out, I'm not getting any younger, and for someone of my advanced age, it's imperative I'm thinking not only about how hard I work out, but also whether I'm getting enough rest. Today's sponsor, Whoop, is a fitness tracker that goes beyond counting steps and provides 24/7 fitness, sleep, and recovery insights personalized to you. There's nothing else like it on the market. Our lives cause different levels of stress on our body, from training to work and our lives at home. Whoop understands that and quantifies it for you into actionable metrics. With Whoop, you'll get daily recovery score that looks at biometrics like heart rate variability, resting heart rate, and your sleep performance to let you know how ready your body is to perform. You're also given insights into the intensity of your training in real time and track how strenuous your day is, as well as get next-level sleep insight with suggested sleep times based on how strenuous your day is, track your sleep stages and cycles, and see how much sleep you get compared to how much you needed. Whether you're looking to be smarter about your fitness, better about your sleep, or be more mindful of your body's recovery, Whoop has you covered. If you're looking to be smarter about how you train, sleep, or recover, Whoop is offering our audience 15% off with the code GD15. Go to whoop.com, that's whoop.com, and use the code GD15 at checkout and optimize your performance with Whoop.
All right, I'm excited to welcome to the Golf Digest podcast two-time major champion and CBS Golf lead on-course analyst, Dottie Pepper. Dottie, thanks for joining us. Thank you for coming on.
Alex Keeling, thank you. Thanks.
Another season underway for you guys at the CBS Golf Gang, obviously covering the Farmers Insurance Open, and, you know, got a great tournament right off the bat there. But first, yeah, what has anything changed in your role? It sounded like you got a little bit of a promotion to the lead on course analyst. What has changed with your role there at CBS?
Well, after week one of 20, nothing has changed because Tiger was in contention and that's where I went. So that really hasn't changed, and that will be the case as the year goes on, that if he's in our broadcast window with a chance to, especially right now chasing the 83,
right,
to become the all-time winningest on the PGA Tour, I will have that assignment. But typically, I will have the last group if he is not in contention. So on the West Coast, that's usually threesomes going off two tees and a little bit later all off one tee as we get back to the East Coast and we have a little more daylight. So some of it's changed, some of it hasn't, but the Tiger thing is always out there, and it'd be pretty cool if I was on the walk on the call for 83.
Right. Yeah. Well, obviously you've followed him a lot through the years. I guess what's kind of your relationship like with him, and how special is that to be kind of the person who gets to track him at many of these events?
Well, I think it's a respectful but casual relationship. And he's also that guy who also never ever say he has no shot, because he sees things in a different way than most players. We barb back and forth, and like I said, I think it's casual, respectful, and you know, I've been around to walk in a few wins, and I've been with him when he really started to come back after the back surgery, when he pushed Koepka so hard at Belle Reve, and I've had a pretty good front seat to watch that guy play a lot of golf.
A lot of people talk about kind of the new Tiger. He's more accessible kind of than he's ever been. Is that something that you've noticed working with him in the last year or so?
I think so. I think he's been more interactive with guys that he's been paired with. Even Sunday, he spent time on the ropes signing autographs, where before that would not have been the case. Or it would have been very short or just very pointed with people that he may perhaps have recognized. But I think there's a guy who's really comfortable in his skin and really appreciative of this, however you want to term it, fourth or fifth chance he has.
Right.
to be back and being competitive at his age.
What did you see specifically from him at Torrey Pines? Anything that makes you think he's going to have a big year, he's not going to have a big year, anything like that?
Oh, I think he's going to have a very big year. I'd be surprised if he didn't. I saw not a whole lot of rust other than not being in that make putt after putt after putt after putt sort of rhythm. But Poa on the West Coast can do that as easily as a little bit of off-season rust. What I was impressed with was he drove the ball pretty well. And he also, if you go over the last couple of rounds, there were a lot of iron shots that were hole high. And that, to me, is the guy who's in control of, A, the golf ball that he's changed, B, trajectory, spin, all of that.
Obviously, the tragedy, the Kobe Bryant, just a weird afternoon, I'm sure, there.
Yeah.
I wonder, when did you first find out about that? And obviously, I don't know if you ended up seeing this, but the CBS cameras, it was a pretty amazing moment of television. They caught when Joe LaCava told Tiger after the round, and he kind of just went, "Excuse me?" And he was shocked. And so just wonder kind of how quickly did you find out? And did you think that the players were aware of this and just that whole dynamic?
Well, we found out it was first broken by TMZ, and I think that was, well, we were on the air at 12 o'clock. It was about 11:30 local time, so an hour and a half after the crash. And then it was more and more news outlets carried it, and we had to get a show on the air.
Right.
They started building graphics. They started talking about how we were going to react, whether it was going to go through news in New York, whether it was going to be handled all where we were at Torrey Pines, and it ended up being a hodgepodge of both. But one of the first things I did was Tiger was about 80 yards behind Joe on the ninth fairway. So I asked him, clear, you know, simple as can be, does he know about Kobe? And Joe's question to me was, has it been confirmed? And I said, yes, by now it has been confirmed. And he said, well, he won't be hearing it from me.
Wow. Mm. Yeah.
So then some other information got kind of fluffed around, and somehow Nick thought that he had been told when in fact he had not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I reconfirmed again so we could correct it in the middle of the 18th fairway. I asked Joey again. Tiger was way ahead. I said, does he have any idea? And he said, absolutely none.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it tells you the way Joe has, he knows his man, mm-hmm. and also knew how it would impact him. So, yeah, I was right behind the cameraman when they got that shot, when he said what he said.
The one thing Tiger did say was that he heard some fans say, you know, do it for Mamba or something like that. But like Tiger said, he hears people scream stuff at him, crazy random stuff at him all the time. Did you hear people in the crowd kind of talking about it or screaming out stuff like that?
I didn't. The only thing I noticed was that the crowd at times, especially probably in the first hour or so after it broke and was confirmed, that the crowd seemed a little more muted than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't hear people saying that because A, I'm usually a little bit ahead of him, and B, I have a cuff on my right ear, so I only hear maybe half of what the crowd's saying anyway, because that's pretty thick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously an incredibly intense day. You've had other very intense days as a commentator, in more positive ways. You were the first woman to commentate at the Masters. Can you speak at all about, you know, what that experience was like and what it meant to you to be the first woman to do that?
I think that's a responsibility. Mm-hmm. It was also, I think it's a chance for me to further understand the Masters, understand the holes you're responsible for. My first Masters, I had 13 and I had 4, and that's continued. Now, don't know what that will look like going forward, but I had 2 holes where a lot of history has happened.
Yeah.
And I think it was really fun to dive into that and dive into the architecture and the changes in those 2 holes over the years. But I also think of it from a 30,000 foot perspective of being there and being part of the announce crew and, yeah, being the first woman to do that. But it also is, I'd be silly if I didn't take it as a point that people are going to be looking closer.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be ready.
Definitely. How different is the Masters for the commentators than any other event?
Well, it's completely different from a television perspective because there are no walkers.
Yeah.
Everyone is in a tower. There's no blimp. You cannot walk on the fairways, anywhere inside the ropes to look at the golf course. If you're looking for specifics, you really need, it is hard.
Yeah.
You rely on the officials, players, caddies, people that are inside the ropes to tell you more specific stuff, even where penalty areas are marked, if there's been any changes there.
Mm.
So you have to kind of rely on your network to get information. But the one thing you can do, and this goes back to Clifford Roberts and Bobby Jones, Clifford Roberts specifically wanted the announcers to be able to putt their greens.
Mm.
So they knew what they were talking about when they got on the air. So that's a really cool thing.
That's amazing.
I take 3 balls out there and I putt my greens, and you're out there when they're cutting the hole. And that's a pretty cool thing, to be able to stand there and hit putts for 10 or 15 minutes and just kind of have that build up to the day start that way.
That's before each round?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
And it's just on the holes that you're covering?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Very cool.
That's awesome.
Yep. How fast are they compared to, you know, what you've seen at other places?
I would say they're pretty weather dependent.
Okay.
I think when it's damp and when it's cool, they are not as fast.
Mm-hmm.
But when that wind gets whistling down there and the air is dry, they are frightening.
Right.
Absolutely frightening.
What about obviously the new event there, the amateur, the women's amateur event there that just started last year, which we saw incredible TV with Jennifer Kupcho winning. What did that mean? What did you think about that? And I assume you would have relished a chance to play in that event when you were younger.
Absolutely. I think they nailed it in every way. And to have her win, hit the shot at 13 the way she did, the way Arnold did 61 years prior, both coming from Wake Forest, and you can't make that stuff up. It was tremendous. And the turnout and little girls out there realizing that this could be something that happens for them down the road. I did a speaking engagement on Sunday night, and it was executive women that had been out there that day, and every one of them either said, I'm getting back in the game because I've given it up for business and my family when I really shouldn't have maybe strayed so far from the game, to others who said, I can do this, I'm taking up the game. So
that's awesome.
It not only it achieved from a competitive standpoint just a wonderful start for the legacy of that championship, but to deliver on getting more people involved in the game, it nailed it.
It also seemed like there was a lot more conversation about like women's college golf, just because so many of the players play collegiately. And I felt like that was definitely a win as well, like, you know, promoting education alongside athletics.
Yeah, promoting the opportunity that's out there. And there are still, as you know, there are still schools that have scholarships go untaken. Mm-hmm. And the opportunities at D2 and D3 schools that even if you're not going to play golf competitively as your vocation, you have it as a business tool, as a life skill tool, as so many things that can be helpful to women for much longer than even a college career or a professional career playing golf.
Yeah. What did you study in school? Are you using your...
Oh, I'm using every bit of it. I was a sports management major.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Yeah. Perfect.
So technically it was sports science, physical education, but I didn't get an education certificate because I knew I wasn't going to stay in the state of South Carolina. So I took all of my electives in the business department.
Cool.
So it was extremely useful. And it's actually an approved major at Furman, but it was actually put together by Cindy Davis, who was at the LPGA, was Nike Golf,
yeah,
all of the above. So I was a recipient of her forward thinking.
I wonder, during your playing career, did you ever envision that you would kind of go on to this as a second career? And why was it such a natural fit for you?
Oh, I definitely... And I told Judy Rankin this numerous times, I want your job. and fortunately, we are such good friends that she knew I was serious, but she also wasn't taken aback by it.
Right.
But yeah, I came up, you know, as Keely knows, living in upstate New York, and from a dad who made it to the majors but didn't make it deep in there for a long time. And the message was always to have a plan B. Mm-hmm. And this was my plan B. And I just happened to get very, very fortunate to have space that opened up as Golf Channel was still pretty young. A producer in Tommy Roy at NBC who saw potential, and now I'm 17 years into it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up because I have a quote from him. When you retired from NBC, and now obviously everybody's glad you came back, he said, what do I have here? You could take her work and make a how-to tape for future broadcasters. That's straight from Tommy Roy, obviously the legendary producer. When you hear words like that from him, I mean, that's got to mean a lot.
Well, it does. And I learned between Tommy Roy and Mike McQuaid at ESPN, where I learned the bulk of my, really, television journalism. I wasn't a journalism major. I wasn't a communications major, but I had components of all of that and what I did study at Furman. And Tommy really helped me on and off the golf course. And his philosophy was always, if even with Johnny's mic being open all the time, if you have a point that you don't agree with and you know something else to be true, say it.
Hmm.
And he didn't care if you were male or female, if you were prepared to back up an argument, back up a statement, to say it. And he spent a lot of time with me mornings before shows went on, even when it was USA doing the coverage of PGA Tour events. And we would go over tape. And we spent a lot of time working on details and little ticks and how to be better, and how to do interviews properly, how to have an exchange with a player that that might be a little difficult, never to ask a question that is a yes or no answer. So all of those sort of things, I was extremely beneficial. And I still have the ear of both him and Mike McQuaid at ESPN, and I consider them not only mentors, but great friends. And so I've been able to take that sort of input and carry it with me to CBS and be able to fit that into the CBS system with Lance and now with Sellers Shy taking over full-time in 21.
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure of doing that roundtable with your whole crew in New York City about a year ago. And you said, I have a thing that you said that I thought was really interesting. We were talking about how much you prepare for the broadcast. You said that you do so much preparing that you probably wind up only using about 3% of what you prepare on the air. I thought that was so cool because, like you said, you have to kind of speak in snippets here and there. But do you ever kind of wish you got to do even more because you do all that work?
I do that work because I hate surprises, first of all. And if you're not the lead walker, as Davis Love is finding out, you often have to prepare for four or five different groups.
Right, right.
And if you don't like surprises, that's a lot of preparation. So that was sort of where that came from.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I'm aiming higher. I want to continue to push the envelope and see where I can go in this business. And my knowledge of the game, my knowledge of the history of the game, leadership, all of that. I hope I could get to share deeper sometime.
You say that you don't like surprises. Can you think of like a biggest surprise that you've ever gotten while you've been commentating?
Oh gosh. Well, I'll tell you a black eye that I still take some heat over. It was in 2017 at New Orleans. And I was, you know, we had just finished the Masters. I'm thinking, you know, when you think about players who've won on tour, you automatically, in most cases, emphasis on the most, think that they gain access to the Masters. Mm-hmm. Well, I know Scott Brown's grandparents have a house that is right behind the first hole at Augusta, off the New Berkman's Road, and they're hanging on to that house until Scott plays in the Masters. So my thought was, well, the guy has never won a golf tournament on the PGA Tour yet. So I did this interview, and I got blown up because I asked him what it was like chasing his first win. Right. And Twitter, social media went ballistic. My fault for not being prepared for it, for the situation of being in a rain delay where we had to go do interviews and grab guys out of the locker room.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I paid for it. And I thought the reaction was outrageous, but I paid for it. And I should have been more prepared and not assuming that because his grandparents still have his house at Augusta, that he hadn't won a golf tournament on the PGA Tour.
Right.
So those are the surprises that I really try not to do anymore.
Yeah, that was tough. Like you said, it was a weird day with the rain delay and everything else. And of course, you know, I want to ask you about your two biggest wins, both at the ANA Inspiration, obviously the Dinah Shore, whatever.
I was waiting for that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So to you, it's still that. And you made that leap then into Poppy's Pond, I guess, twice. And how
wrong.
No, you didn't. Okay, so that's wrong. What I don't know.
Surprise.
Okay, tell me.
So the first time I won, it was in a playoff, and it was on the 10th hole, which, as you know, is landlocked.
Yes, yes.
There was no dive into Poppy's Pond.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was good.
Okay, okay, so you got to do it, though, the second time.
I did.
Okay, so you got to do that. And we've heard, you know, different people get injured or whatever through the years, not maybe players, but like parents or caddies. I mean, were you worried about that? How did it go for you?
Well, if you look at my record post that Dinah win in 1999, there's about a 6-week gap where I either didn't play or withdrew from golf tournaments.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Because I got a bacterial infection from all that was in the park.
Oh, oh no.
I still do not remember flying back across the country.
Wow.
Flew up to Sacramento to play in the next tournament and ended up in, I think I spent, there were 3 days I was in and out of urgent care. Brandi Burton's aunt took me to the plane, to put me to the plane, on the plane, and I still don't remember the flight back.
Oh my goodness.
Whoa.
Wow.
I was serious sick.
That is scary. That's scary, right? Stuff. So people yeah. really need to be aware of this, I feel like. That's kind of, I hope they've cleaned it up in that pond.
They have resurfaced the bottom.
Okay.
And cleaned it all up. It's actually a secondary pond now. If you look at it from an aerial, the area that's right there where the traditional Sunday hole location is to the right, it's very bright because it's actually concrete at the bottom now.
Yes.
And that's how Stacey Lewis's mom got hurt.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So one thing gets cleared up and now it's more
yes,
ponds. Yeah.
Correct.
They should call it Dottie's Pond, though, at least that portion of it. That you used to cheese. Wow.
That's or give crazy. You a pre-pack of some sort of antibiotic.
Right.
Yeah, you get the trophy and a Z-pack.
That's right. Exactly.
Oh, man.
You obviously spend most of your time working on the men's tour, but I'm just curious how you feel about like the current state of the women's tour, and you know how you feel it's different from when you were on tour.
I still watch a decent amount of it, and this year because there's going to be an occasion to do some golf for the LPGA tournament. I'm paying even more attention than normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the only thing. I think the level of golf is outstanding. The depth is outstanding. The way it is truly a worldwide tour is outstanding. And what Mike Wan has done really is remarkable, to think what he's done over this last decade. Mm-hmm. The only thing I still am trying to figure out why they think this is so attractive is to have one par five reachable for every player in the field every day.
Mm.
To me, It's messing with records, it's messing with scoring, and it's put the best player out there. If you can't hit it far enough, then figure out a way to get the ball in the hole faster or right. figure out a way to hit it farther.
Right.
I mean, I know that sounds extremely old school, but I think that's really skewing scoring, and I think it skews technically how you go about winning golf tournaments.
Hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, is there?
I'm not a fan of that.
Okay, yeah. Is there a player on the LPGA who you see and you say, "Wow, that really reminds me of when I was younger"?
Oh gosh, I think Jennifer Kupcho does a little bit.
Okay,
maybe not as fiery, but she does. You know, she's not super super long, but she went and finished school and. Did all those things that's going to set her up, I think, for a very long post-golf successful life, career, on and on. I don't think she has all of the magical tools that maybe other players do, but I think she's figured out a way to grind it out, and she seems just really well-balanced, and I applaud that.
Yeah, she is definitely so gritty. Yeah. It's been a while since the tour has had, you know, like an Annika or a Lorena, just like that single dominant player. And part of that is the extreme depth on tour right now. Do you see anyone that you think could kind of separate themselves and rise above?
Gosh, I mean, that's going to be a tall task right now.
Yeah, right.
I think that's going to be very hard to do. And I think part of it is because of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And when a podium sport is introduced to countries, especially developing countries, there's all of a sudden this funding and attention and expectation of performance. And I think that's going to make it more difficult for one player to rise out of this crop or a future crop, because there are so many more players that have this expectation of excellence. I just think if you look at look at the Korean team that comes out. Look at the way the Swedes were earlier in my career. Mm-hmm. The minute you throw Olympic focus and Olympic money at a sport, I think it's going to be very difficult for one particular person to dominate because there's just so much more involvement and so many other people are thinking, wow, this is a fantastic opportunity. It's a life-changing opportunity for a lot of people.
Sure. Well, speaking of great players, obviously you have Michelle Wee, who is going to join you guys at CBS at least at some point this year. I want to know what your thoughts on her doing that is, and you know, if you guys have talked, and then also just in general, obviously, I think I keep being told, and it's true, it's an impressive roster you have now with five major champs, not even including Wee, who are in your regular rotation there at CBS. What's the new team like? I know you're only 1 week in, but what's that like working with kind of this new team?
Well, to go back to your first point, Michelle is going to be on site to do digital work at the Masters.
Okay, the Masters, right.
And yes, just at the Masters. She's got a baby due, believe it or not, in July, and the other tournament she was going to do, she's not going to be able to do. It's going to be just about delivery time, actually.
Right.
But yes, we have spoken, and I shared with her some of my behind-the-scenes resources at the Masters, and I sent her a book that I thought would be extremely valuable for her, and I gave Davis Love the same book. But so she was one of those people, like the two of you, didn't realize you can't be inside the ropes walking at the gusset. She's like, right. Well, how do I prepare? I said, you walk with the rest of the patrons outside and you ask questions.
Yeah.
So try to ease her into what you're allowed to do.
Right.
Where you are allowed to go, what the expectations are, even down to making sure if you have a cell phone on the property that it has the proper credential attached to it, mm-hmm. because they're not allowed unless you have the Masters approved sticker on your mobile device. So if she can be onboarded quicker than others, then I've done my job.
Mm-hmm.
But our new team, I am really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my husband last night at dinner, I said, okay, so you watched more golf this weekend than you normally do. What did you think? He said, it certainly didn't seem like it was the first time that group had ever been together.
Right, right.
And I think that was quite the compliment. Now, you know, we've had Mark do some events in the past. He does a lot of PGA Tour digital.
Right.
Frank has been at Golf Channel for way a long time.
Yes.
And in a variety of different situations, whether it be studio, whether it be live, whether it be the late night shows, he's done all of that. So in no way is he a rookie. And he's done a few of our shows. He was doing five events for CBS in the years prior. But to have Davis come in as, you know, just first event out, yeah, we did two boot camp sessions, and I went in for the one at Sea Island, and he was prepared. Are there some things he knows that he needs to work on? Sure. And that's why he's doing Phoenix this week.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to continue to improve. But I think the exciting thing about it is he's excited about it. He's excited about finding out where you find the information about the players, how you react, how the television side of it works, the timing of the day. Preparing for those multiple groups because you don't really know how it's all going to shake out sometimes until 20, 30 minutes before you're live on the air, who you're mm-hmm. going to go with. So I think there's a new energy, and I'm really excited for where we're going to go. And then we have Andrew Catalan coming in later that mm-hmm. will take the second position behind Nance in those other events. So I think we have Andrew for 5 or 6 weeks. It's going to be fantastic.
Right, and I know you got Pebble coming up, so I just, you know, have you gotten to hit a few shots in Jim's backyard over there at the hole, get your name on that plaque?
Name's not on the plaque, but I have hit shots. It's, you know, there is so much cajoling that goes on when you're up there.
Right.
And it's everybody from the BAs and the every level of production.
Right.
He usually has them over, and you're obligated to, I think the max you're allowed is 3 shots.
Okay. Very cool. Well, hopefully this is the year you get your name on the plaque. We'll look forward to listening to you guys throughout the rest of the season. Of course, we wish you another great year out there on tour, and hopefully you're there right with Tiger when he breaks the record. That'd be really cool.
That would be outstanding. I have this great shot of Snead down in my workout room from the Greenbrier Solheim Cup back in, I guess it was, what, 1994. And, you know, that means a lot. And if it somehow happened to be there when Tiger breaks that record, that would be pretty exceptional.
Very cool, very cool. Thank you, Dottie, so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
For so many golfers, the game just isn't the same without dipping on the green. Watch closely, and you'll certainly catch your favorite players dipping on the course. With Black Buffalo, you can keep the ritual and ditch the tobacco. Black Buffalo is a tobacco alternative that delivers the same experience as traditional smokeless products, just without the tobacco leaf or stem. The same taste, the same texture, the same nicotine buzz. It's only available online at blackbuffalo.com. Use promo code GOLF for 25% off your first purchase. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
All right, thanks again to Dottie Pepper, who will be at Pebble Beach this week for CBS. Didn't get her gambling picks, unfortunately. I should have asked Dottie. But for those, we have Steve Hennessy, Chris Powers, as usual, joining me. Guys, first let's start with the Super Bowl. Obviously, we made some picks last week. I was wrong, although, again, the Niners, I mean, you're up 20-10, 6 minutes left, other team third
Shame.
And 15. And
they
their
blew
own
it. They got that nice picture in the end zone, though, after
They
after
did
the
have
pick.
The picture in the end zone. I mean, the game.
Kyle Shanahan, again, that's his
They
MO.
Must have been 90% to win the game at that point,
yep.
At least.
And it was just, I mean, Mahomes looked terrible. We talked about it. But Eli-esque.
It was
Still overall, again, right, if I bet the Niners, and I was telling this to Steve, if I bet the Niners and I lose that bet, I'd prefer that Mahomes had a, you know, legendary game.
Right.
I know everybody's gonna pump it up from now, but like through three and a half quarters he had a F game.
Everything F. Short arm.
And I'll even give him
guessing.
Right. The even with the two touchdowns at the end, I said C minus C game. I know it's different. It's the Super Bowl, but like, so maybe I'm hard drudging him a little harsher, but whatever. He didn't have a great game. He wins. Jimmy Garoppolo had a worse game.
Like,
I don't care what the stats say. Jimmy Garoppolo, even the completions, the throws were behind guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
he was
the completions
open.
That were 8-10 yards should have been 20 yards. He wasn't, you know, he was shaky, the dumb pick.
He got burned by the Kittle play at the end of the half, too, the push-off. Mm-hmm.
That's true. That was his best throw of the game. And that's one of those plays, you know, you go back to the Vikings-Saints game, Kyle Rudolph did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's not called. George Kittle does it. It's called in the Super Bowl.
Game-changing
that,
play.
That blew my mind. But, yeah, he missed Sanders, obviously, deep at the end.
He's
he missed
got,
Kittle on another
like
third
down.
Like
you said, he should have just – I mean, you can underthrow it and get a pass interference. That might be your best bet there.
Yeah.
I think he had to just launch it. And.
But he missed him by a ton.
Maybe like 5 years ago, Sanders gets under
when
that.
When the receiver like kind of pulls up and doesn't even go for it, that's how bad of an overthrow it was. And
it was kind of the perfect cap on a tough Sunday for me. I had Finau. Looked like he was
a
winner.
Brutal.
Would have won a nice amount of money because I jumped on him live on Friday. And then we lost on the 49ers also. So.
Yeah. And to start the day, we still had Chris and I really high hopes on J.B. Holmes, the 36-hole leader, and then two off the lead going to the final round. We had him 110-1. We had on at 70-1. He's lurking there in four strokes back. And through 36 holes, he was two strokes back.
He couldn't have been looking better.
Really with two long shot guys. And then, you know, you're like, oh, and then you're going to lead into the Super Bowl, and then you end up getting killed. Although, Chris, you did great on Super Bowl, and you won
great
a prop or two?
A couple I had. After the
oh my goodness, you had that guy scoring a touchdown.
Yeah,
I had Kyle Juszczyk to score the next touchdown, which was when he scored, it hit. I was gonna take Jimmy G because Mahomes had just scored.
Right.
I was like, maybe they get down QB sneak, and I for those touchdowns, you want to just take the highest odds.
Yeah,
and he was 16-1.
Juszczyk was 16-1. Yeah. I was going crazy. It was $7 bet to win like $120.
And then
bucks
you
or
and then you
like
had
that.
Him to win MVP.
Just
and
put
he
$2
literally
on
missed.
Him.
He missed a second touchdown by a foot. He might have won.
Someone tweeted out.
Well, they would have had to win the game, obviously.
Right.
But
someone tweeted out a Juszczyk 2 touchdowns or more ticket, which was like the kid bet like you know $100 on it.
Oh,
it was like
my
plus.
God.
It was 80-1 or something like that.
Wow.
Brutal. I mean, and we always talk about every time they get near the 1 yard line. It's like it comes up short, and there's always a review. It's amazing how often it happens.
Except they gave
except for
the Chiefs touchdown to win the Super Bowl.
I've never seen anything like it.
I mean,
it was simultaneous.
It was simultaneous.
I contended simultaneous.
But so either way, it wouldn't have counted. I mean, you know what I mean? They would have upheld the call either
right,
way.
Right, right,
right. I mean, that is, and that would have been the all-time fourth down play. I mean, they would have gone for it.
Yes,
but would have been dicey. You never know. You fumble the snap.
I mean, that D line.
Yeah,
all game.
Not a great game.
It was fun. It was a fun.
It was a good fourth quarter.
It was
but
a great game. But not for us, betting wise.
Oh, it was. Yeah. It was
not
a
that
lot
many
of fun
memorable
for me.
Plays though until late.
No,
really.
That's what happens in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah,
good offense. Good defense.
Well, the last couple of years, yeah, for sure.
Too much. There's too much chaos going on too.
Well, on the bright side, I have. I don't know if you remember, I invested in that golfer a few years back.
Yes. Right.
So he made it to the European Tour, Dave Kuplin. Congratulations to him. But he made it through Q School, so he didn't really win that much money last year. In fact, he was on like the Korn Ferry equivalent last year in Europe, the Challenge Tour.
Yep.
He actually made less money than he did on the Mini Tour the year before because he like dominated the Mini Tour
right,
so much. And
right.
So my shares actually went down in value. But he ended the agreement because now he's on the Euro Tour and the money's so much different and whatever and the expenses and everything. But I ended up money, and just even getting money back, he PayPal'd me. I got back like $250,
wow.
Like my initial investment plus like, I don't know, $50 or something.
Boom.
So nice. Whatever it was, I felt like I made money because when I spent that money, I was kind of doing it for the story, and I just thought like I was going to lose anyway.
Right.
And so at least I had some cap, and I promptly blew most of it on Super Bowl.
He should throw you a few bucks if he gets like a top five or a top 10 in the Euro bet. I mean, you're kind of the reason why he's there. We'll see.
We're rooting for him anyway. Yeah. But anyway, all right, move on to Pebble Beach this week. Again, I'm really you guys are going to have to convince me on some bets here because I'm off the Scheffler close call the Holmes and on. I mean, so many close calls.
You can't get off the wagon now. I mean,
we're circling it and we're getting close. But it's tough. You don't get anything when you miss.
Right.
Again, because we're not doing these each way bets. Although Holmes and on completely fell off the map.
Holmes didn't even finish top 10.
Right. But it's just so tough because we're making these great bets and not being rewarded. I mean, great bets.
That's all you
Holmes?
Could
do. No one was saying JB Holmes. Anyway. All right.
What are you going to do?
Steve, why don't you start with just some of the big, the best bets at MGM, the best odds coming into Pebble.
So we're here at Pebble. Top guys on the MGM odds board as of Tuesday when we're recording this are Dustin Johnson. He's back over from Saudi Arabia. He finished T2 last week. He's 6.5 to 1. Patrick Cantlay is 11 to 1. Paul Casey 18 to 1. Jason Day 20 to 1. Brant Snedeker 22 to 1. Kuchar 22 to 1. And Mickelson, the defending champ, is 25 to 1. So it's not the strongest top of the board. Obviously, I think years past there have been a little stronger guys near the top.
Said Day is 20 to 1.
Yeah, 20 to 1.
I know he's got a great track record
here.
That just seems really low.
It's a little low.
I mean, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah, it's kind of a matter of, you know, the field, the strength of the
field. Right, right. No, for sure.
Yeah, I think he's finished in the last 5 years. He hasn't finished worse than T11 here.
No, he's been great. I saw a stat. It was him and Spieth have had in the last 5 years, I think, the best cumulative under par.
Right.
But again, Spieth, it's like, what's Spieth?
Spieth, you got to go all the way down to 45 to 1.
See, I'd rather bet him at 45 than
I'll
Day
let
at 20.
You take that. he's changing his grip on
that's
the PGA
true.
Tour.
He's like messing. I know it's like us.
It is amazing.
Like, change your grip.
Once he like figures it out, you're never going to see these numbers again. So
of course.
You could make that argument like. Just bet Spieth while he's 40 to 1 or higher, but yeah, you're right. I wouldn't.
Well, so we kind of said that last year, and then he had that one little spurt, and he got people like, oh, he's almost back.
Yeah,
and now he's reverted back to struggling as bad as ever. And right, you meant like the grip, and like he's talking about all this technical stuff he's working on. Well, meanwhile, last year through first and second round scoring, he basically led the tour,
right.
And then the weekend he was terrible. So to me, it's not really a technical thing. I mean, so
he said he has never hit it better in his Friday round last year. I think he said that a couple times.
He has, yeah.
But you know, if there's somewhere where he figures it out, maybe it's Pebble.
No.
I mean, it's Augusta and Pebble are his. You know,
I don't hate
courses.
It. I don't hate the Spieth bet. I hate the Day bet. I don't hate the Spieth bet.
Yeah, I don't know about either of them.
Chris, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to kick it. I hate betting favorites, obviously. Like we had last week, JB and on. You can win big money if they win. But obviously, Webb ended up winning.
Was
right?
12 to 1.
But before that, the past four events, I think it was a guy 50 to 1 or higher had won each time. But Webb finally got it done. Good for him. But if you're going to take a favorite this week, I'm going to go with Snedeker. I think the weather's going to be little crappy on the weekend. It looks like 15 mile an hour.
Loves a slop.
Yep. Loves a slop. It'll be high 50s, but a little windy on the weekend.
He loves the wind, really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if he can, you know, get off to a good start Thursday, Friday, I think he'll clean up on the weekend. If you're going to bet a favorite this week, I like Snedeker, two-time winner at Pebble, just finished tied for third
at Torrey.
Yep.
And he's sixth on POA greens in the last 50 rounds per Fantasy National.
Also on Fantasy National, he's top 10 in this field in strokes gained, total short game around the green and putting. So
I'm with you. He was one of my picks, too. Love Sneds. You know, I think course history here is pretty indicative of success. And Sneds is also a really good scrambler. You have to do that really well at Pebble, how small these greens are, 3,500 square feet on average. They're the smallest greens in golf, so I like Sneds for that reason. My first pick would be Paul Casey. He also has great success at Pebble, lost last year to Phil, obviously, and then T8 the year before. He also finished around the top 20 at the U.S. Open last year. He's just so good strokes gained off the tee and approach. This is per our guy Pat Mayo. He has not lost strokes off the tee or approach since the Players. He's gained in every event since the Players. And you know, we know he does well here at Pebble. Strokes gained on par fours, he's second in the field in the last 50 rounds, which is key here. So the only thing that kind of worries me is scrambling the short game with Casey. You know, it could be a little suspect. He's 82nd strokes gained short game the last 50 rounds, but you know, Casey 18-1 on MGM. You know, I'm willing to take a stab at him. He's kind of like the Webb Simpson in this field to me. Mm-hmm.
Kind of crazy. Phil won this last year. It seems like years ago when he won, because
he
was coming off that great finish in Palm Springs when Adam Long upset everybody. And then Phil goes here and he wins here. And the weekend he was incredible. And I don't have that Monday finish, but like, he shot really low those last couple rounds. Mm-hmm. He steamrolled past Paul Casey. His world ranking was way up there. And now he's just like really in a free fall. Although he did finish third in
Saudi
Arabia
last week.
Right.
Yeah.
So that kind of bounced him back. But still, to see him at 25 to 1 is still, I know he's
really
got a great track record here, but man, that seems like a long time ago. Before I forget, Webb, obviously the winner in Phoenix, he now has his odds, Masters odds, have been slashed down to 40 to 1, which honestly still seems decent considering the run that he's on. And that run started with a T5 at Augusta National last year. I think he's got 16 events in a row where his worst finish is a T30. He has four runners up, the win, everything else. And I know Steve, just even on Sunday before he won, he was still 66
to 1 on Sunday as he's in that duel with Finau. And I, you know, figured that Finau would win, and I would wait to take that bet. You know, after all my Super Bowl bets went through, and now
that just shows you, by the way, I mean, how much a guy's odds can change in one day.
Yep.
Where, you know, obviously these books now have the live betting, everything else going on. But if you're looking at the Masters bet specifically, and you're you should look at a leaderboard coming into a Sunday and think, if this is a guy you're thinking about, you might as well jump on him, because if he wins. All right. Well, Chris, back to you. I know one of your favorite golfers this week is one of your favorite picks. Tell
us
about
correct. And I'm seeing a lot of all these guys we follow on Twitter who are very good, very sharp.
I'm seeing a lot of talk
about
too.
Him. Yeah. All I just want it to be known, I've been on Patrick Rogers since he came out of the womb. So he's mine when he eventually wins. But no, everyone can join the bandwagon now if they want. Yeah. That's cool. He's 66 to 1 on MGM, which kind of tells me maybe they think he's going to have another good week. He's played well, but I got him 125 to 1 on DraftKings. So did Steve. And that was with a free bet, which DraftKings gave me, probably because I had such a dominant weekend. And so he just finished T9 at Torrey, T16 at Waste Management, and he was actually three. I know you guys get my live Rogers updates, so you know this. He was 3 under through 3 on Sunday, and ended up shooting 3 under. So he could have like gone off, maybe crept into the top 10, but he did not. He tied for 8th at Pebble in 2018. He loves POA. We've talked about that. That's why he always plays well at Torrey. Lighting it up on the greens in his last 5 events. The only thing he struggles with is his approach game, which is kind of important at Pebble, so that would worry me. But
the only thing he struggles with is actually winning a tournament. let's be honest, because he's never done that.
He's had a lot of chances though, and this could be the week. I'm feeling good.
This
about
could
it.
Be
great.
The week.
Great vibes for
great
Patty
vibes
Rogers.
For Patrick Rogers, who when he wins,
Rogers is yeah. You're gonna be Rogers is your guy. I'm trying like off the beat guys who we love. Obviously, Haas has always been my guy because he's Wake Forest classmate of mine, and I knew him a little. Yeah. Steve, who's like your guy?
God.
Because like obviously we all love Tiger,
yeah. Right.
But like
it was always Spencer Levine.
Spencer Levine. There
back
we go.
Back in the day.
Okay, so Spencer Levine
loved him. Just kind of smoking he's cigarettes on the course.
Yeah, he's not around. You need a guy who's like
I know
around.
Benyon could have been the
Benyon
guy.
Benyon, who's now on, is officially on the off list. I said that
he
last
was
week.
Last week.
He was
and
last
we
week.
Took
I still got suckered into $10 more bet on him. I'm done. This is getting too expensive
he's
for me.
Back on the
we
off.
Need to be. We really do need to be compensated for these picks.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
I hope our boss is listening to this.
Right.
Yeah.
So on is off.
Off.
Tony Finau, who I declared on the off list, I was 100% convinced he was going to win because I just put him on the off list.
Yep.
He didn't win. He still didn't win. I don't know how he didn't win. He didn't win. He's still on the off list.
I don't think I'll ever
Ricky.
Get over that.
Yeah, Ricky. That was
that was brutal.
Being sharp and getting that.
And not that he needed to be put on it, but J.B. Holmes is on the off list now too. Because, you know, if he had anything over the weekend, he would have won the tournament.
We talked about it. He does this like a lot. A
yeah.
Yes. Kind of just like completely imploding on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why I kind of I called it the worst bet in golf history when you guys made it.
Right,
I was completely.
And then he made a hole in one like 5 minutes later, and he was right back
13 under through the first 2 rounds.
Brutal.
Anyway, all right, Steve. Who else? Let's give some final bets here, guys.
Go one more long shot. Lonto Griffin is 110-1, which in this field 110-1 for someone who's played really well the last couple months feels a little too high. A little value there. He's 5th in strokes gained on par fours of less than 400 yards. There's a lot of those. We didn't talk about how there's 3 courses here, Spyglass, Monterey Peninsula.
Yep.
It's kind of the last of this rotation of multiple courses. So you got a 54-hole cut instead of the Friday cut.
And you have the celebrities to deal with.
Yeah.
And amateurs to deal with, which is even more tough.
It really makes the Saturday broadcast somewhat brutal when you're watching Larry the Cable Guy chop it up. But, I mean, it's Pebble. You know, it means a lot to a lot of people. So, anyway, Lonto, 110-1, decent value there.
I'm not going to break these guys down, but Ches Reavy, Scott Piercy always play well here. They both played well in U.S. Open here.
I like those.
They're both 85-1.
Piercy played well at Phoenix last week.
Yep. DFS lineups I would build around those guys.
Cameron Champ is like 60-1. You know, those are pretty steep numbers for him, for a guy who's probably going to win a lot. Way off the beaten path here. Bo Hustler, top 10, is 12-1. Claire's ball. He opened 65-67 here 2 years ago, completely imploded on the weekend.
Okay.
But he plays well in California, great history at U.S. Open, was in California.
Yep.
Plays well at Torrey, plays well here. If he can avoid that Saturday disaster, which has kind of plagued him, similar to Spieth a year ago, I like him to creep around the top
12
10.
12-1, top 10.
12-1, top 10. And then just little props on DK. Since I'm so hot right now, I see the whole board just lighting up. Winner to birdie the 72nd hole is plus 250. Pebble,
par 5.
Wow. Every year the winner birdies that hole, I feel like.
That's true. Although if there's a big lead, he might just
bunt it up there.
Yeah.
Also true.
Also,
I think I don't have the odds, but they're pretty good. To end in a playoff. Every week we have a playoff. You might as well start cashing in on it, and it's plus odds. The tournament to go to a playoff. There's 3-man, 4-man, but you can
But didn't we have like that 30-tournament streak where it didn't go? And now it's
then last one, Matthew Fitzpatrick to miss the cut is plus 200. I hear he has a new caddy on the bag this week.
I was going
to
say.
You're saying Danny's daggering the mush this week?
Daniel Rappaport, our colleague,
no,
is on
the bag.
No,
we're rooting for him. We're rooting for him. Yeah. No, I hope he does well. But, you know, that's a rookie caddy, plus 200 caddy to miss the cut.
So that's purely on the caddy? We're just
That's insider info right there, by the way, folks. It's Golf Digest own Daniel Rappaport, who's a fellow Northwestern guy with Matt Fitzpatrick.
Just want to see if he's listening through the whole podcast.
That's right.
He's been crunching Fitz's numbers.
Now, Fitz is playing well. I mean, I think he'll play well this week, too. But, you know, plus 200.
The weather might be tough for Dan. Yeah.
That's true.
He's a Cali guy.
Might be a little too soft for that.
Doesn't have that.
Fitz will be fine.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, the weather we didn't really talk about, it's not supposed to get higher than 60 all week, which is not what you think of
Pebble
Beach.
Windy on the weekend.
Yeah. Well, you talked about Snedeker, how he plays well in those conditions. So, like that for that reason. And I'll give one more little strategy for anyone betting the tournament. I like it. In-game odds, you got to look at that because you got the three different courses. So, there's no shot link over at Monterey Peninsula or Spyglass. So, you could kind of catch.
Which stinks, by the way.
It does.
I thought we were done with that, but no.
This is the last one. Yeah. But you could catch odds makers kind of sleeping a little bit because there's not that data.
Right.
You know, coming over to the odds makers that quickly. So, you know, follow guys on Twitter and like PGA Tour Live on Sirius, the radio. You know, that's how when Ted Potter won in 2018, he was 125-1, you know, when he was on 59 watch on Monterey Peninsula.
Wow.
Just because the odds makers, you know, they're not paying as close of attention
right.
as golf Twitter is. So, you know, if you have someone going really low on one of those other courses, you could get a really good number that way.
And it's a good point. I've seen some stats that Monterey Peninsula has kind of emerged as the easiest of the three.
Yeah.
And the big names are going to be playing Pebble on Saturday.
Correct.
They line that up so they're on TV. Mm-hmm. That's where all the cameras are. So if you have a guy through 36 who's playing Monterey specifically on Saturday, you could see a low number and you could get a guy who's, you know, way down on the board. But
that's a great call. So Andrew Landry, when he won, he was 40-1, you know, even after Friday at the Amex and ended up going on to win.
Right.
Because, you know, there wasn't that shot link data to odds makers. So
right.
A little sharp tip.
Very sharp.
Sharp tip. All right. Well, it should be fun. Obviously, we'll all be watching. CP, you're going to Vegas, though.
I don't know if I'll
bachelor party. Yeah. You'll be
I'll try and stay in tune with it. But Saturday we will be at a sports book. But I think there's just going to be college basketball on. I don't know if they're going
to be tough to.
They might throw the golf, huh?
I mean, but maybe I'll throw a matchup bet on Saturday.
It is Pebble. I mean, people. Yeah. It's still
a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then again, I don't know if I'm going to be watching.
Right. Well, yeah. Enjoy it. You're gonna.
Well, you got some extra capital going to Vegas.
That cap from the Super Bowl.
I'm ready to roll.
Saturday at noon, probably.
Yep, easily.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks again to Dottie Pepper for joining us. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Greg Gottfried. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already, and check back next week to see who our guest is.